I have this thing where, like, I would wake up in a hospital and I'd be all hooked up with these IVs and stuff like that. And I would just instantly rip the IVs out of my arms and be like, I need to leave. Like, y'all are trying to detox me. I don't remember coming here willingly. I don't know how I got here, but I know that y'all are trying to detox me and I'm not trying to get detoxed. So I would rip out the IVs and I'd just be bleeding down the hallways. And I would get in an Uber and I'd tell the Uber, take me to the liquor store and then drop me off here or whatever.
Welcome to Stories of Recovery, a production from Mar Addiction Treatment Centers in Atlanta. I'm your host, Matt Shedd. Ethan M. prided himself on how many times he had failed to get sober after treatment. Then he ended up at Mar, where for several months he got a glimpse of what sobriety and community life could look like. But he left secretly before he was ready. Within a week, he was drunk. And after a disastrous relapse, he wound up back at Mar with a newfound spirit of willingness. And for Ethan and treatment, the 19th time turned out to be a charm. Here's Ethan.
So my mother always tells me that if there's a wrong way to do something, that I'll find it, or a hard way to do something, I will find it. So I went to Mar twice, and almost every treatment center I've been to at least twice. So before I was there, what was going on a little bit before that?
Yeah, before the first time you came to Mar.
Whew, man, I'd been jumping around from sober livings to rehabs to, I mean, I was living in the parking lot of Walmart for about 4 or 5 months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How many treatment centers had you gone to?
I've been to 19 total. Mar was my 18th and 19th treatment center.
Wow.
Yeah. I went to my first one when I was 17, and like I just never had an interest in getting sober. I just never thought it would work for me or anything like that. And so I used to like love that number, saying, you know, it's been 19 treatment centers and all that stuff, because like it made it sound like to normal people that this guy is just hopeless, you know. But the truth is I never actually tried to do any of the steps or anything like that. I never tried a single step until I got to Mar. So.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So normally I would just go to like a 30-day treatment center, go there for 30 days, figure out what I was going to do differently as soon as I got out. Using wise, like never picked up a big book, never picked up a sponsor or anything like that. Just was like, okay, what is my next plan? When I get out of here, let's learn from those mistakes and we're going to do this time. And then none of that stuff ever worked. But like, it was normally other people trying to get me in places. It was never really for myself. Mm-hmm. So
when was the first treatment at Mar?
The first treatment at Mar. I came to Mar January 6th of 2020. I had been in a detox center. I was living at the parking lot of Walmart, and I had gotten arrested for a public intoxication there. And this had happened a couple times at Walmart. And so, you know, normally I would just get arrested for a public intoxication, wake up, and I had a truck. I was living in the truck. And so, like, I would just walk back to the truck and I'd be like, okay, you know, here I am again. And this one time I get arrested and I walk back to the Walmart and my truck's not there. And I'm like, okay. So now what do I do? So now I'm going to like Motel Sixes and stuff like that, and I'm living in Motel Sixes, like paying for one night and staying for, you know, as long as I can, just skipping into other rooms, trying to figure out which room is available, and then live that way for a while. And finally, I made a drunk phone call on like Christmas or something like that. I remember I was in there for Christmas, and I'd made a drunk phone call to somebody. And that person was like, man, no one has seen you in a while. People are really, really worried about you. Like, where are you at? And I guess I gave that person my whereabouts. And so then they came and picked me up and like forced me into a detox. That was December 25th of 19.
Okay.
So then I go in to a detox center and I see my family for the first time in a little bit. And like, they're shocked to see me, and they're offering me a solution, and they're like, man, we found this place and it's called Mars. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to Mars, you know, like that. So like, and so, you know, I leave the detox center. I talked to Jordan on the phone. Sure. Over there for an hour or so. He's telling me all about this place, and I'm like, all right, you know, like it's not going to work, but let's go. Cause I've got nothing else going on, you know? And so I come to Mar January 6th. So I get here and, I immediately wanted to leave. Like, first instance, I wanted to leave. I remember I came in on a Monday and they were having community. And so before all this, like, I had been living at sober livings, mm-hmm. and I'd been getting kicked out of those constantly. And so I come in that day, and they do my administration and all that, and the nursing and all that stuff. And then they're like, well, Ethan, you're in luck. You're going to make it to your first community. You're going to go meet the guys in your apartment, and they're having a meeting called community. And I'm like, okay, sure. So then we go back to the apartments, and it's like a normal kind of like sober living situation. You know, I've been to multiple of these. I've seen how they have like community meetings and all that stuff. And there's a guy there, Ashley McQueen, and 18 other patients. Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking that Ashley lives with us, you know, because in sober living, there's always a house manager. And I'm listening to Ashley, and I'm listening to these guys talk for 2 hours. And it seems like they have to ask to go to the restroom. Like, they've got to ask to do everything. And I'm just like, how fast can I get them to get me my credit card so I can get the heck out of Atlanta? Mm-hmm. Like, there's no way I'm living with this man, Ashley McQueen. I'm not doing this program. And then that meeting ended, and Ashley left, and then they told us that we had separate apartments, so there wasn't all 18 of us in there. And I go up there to my apartment. It was 565, I think. And I go up there, and I've got three other guys with me, and they're like, well, Ethan, you can't use the phone. And I'm like, who's stopping me? And they're like, well, it's us. I'm like, okay, none of y'all are counselors. And I'm like, all right. And I've got my wallet, I've got my ID, and I've got $60 in my pocket. Well, you know, what's stopping me from going to the liquor store right now? They're like, us. And I'm like, we'll see how this works out. Right. You know, that's exactly what I'm thinking. And I'm sitting there, and, you know, the guys are just kind of hanging out with me and stuff like that. And they're telling me we're going to a meeting later on. And I don't know, I had a little bit of ease and comfort that night. And I go to the meeting, and I come back, and I'm sitting there on the couch. I'm sitting there with Marcus, and I'm asking Marcus every single question about this place. Like, I am trying to figure this place
out.
Marcus is another client, yeah. Okay. He had been there for about 4 months. He had been halfway for about 4 months, and he was getting ready to leave and go over to Three Quarters. And I'm just trying to gain all this information from him. And I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking, you know, there's something about this place. Like, I don't know what it is. It's my first day. And I'm like, I have the ability to walk out of here right now with some money in my pocket. I've got the ability to use the phone they're telling me I can't use, but I'm not doing it for some reason. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I mean, I have just like a moment of clarity. And I'm like, this place could work. But then I'm sitting there in my mind going, it's not going to work for me, but like, I can see how this could work for somebody else. And I was like, this actually, you know, could be a good place. And I'm going to stay here is what I've decided at that point, because I was going to leave earlier that day. But I was like, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and give this a shot and stay here. But in my mind, I was just still thinking, there's no way this place can work for me. That was my first night at Mar.
Then this is
my first stint there. Okay. Yes. But the entire time I'm telling everybody, like, I did not move to Atlanta. You know, like, I'm from Dallas. I'm going back to Dallas. Like, I'm just here to try out y'all's program. I am not staying here. And so, you know, it comes down to the 6 month time, and I've been in Three Quarters now for about 3 months, and I got a good group of guys and stuff, and I've got a sponsor that I really like. But I still have one foot in and one foot out. Like, I'm still holding on to things that I don't want to tell people. I'm like, you know, Ashley McQueen called me a community guy. He was like, Ethan, you're great with the community, but you're not doing the other stuff. And I wasn't. He's absolutely correct. So the 6 months comes to the point, and we're in our community, or Three Quarters community, and I raise my hand, and I'm like, all right, I just want to put my my 30 days in. I stayed for 6 months, and I just want to let y'all know I'm getting out of here. Mm-hmm. And everybody was just silent. Everybody was like, you know, it was just a horrible idea is basically what everybody was telling me. And so I'm thinking about it, and I'm like, you know, like, I've got a good roommate situation. I've got an okay job. I was over at the farmer's market making $15 an hour on the forklift back there, working with a couple other friends at Mar, and I'm like, you know, I don't have a solid plan yet back in Dallas. So I'm like, okay, let's stay for 3 more months. That would be 9 months of sobriety. At that point, I should have a plan to go back to Dallas. My family at that point should then see that I've got 9 months of sobriety and that I'm okay. So it was just another timeline thing. And then, you know, and then it came down to me staying there for another 3 months. So I had 9 months at this point, and I go again to raise my hand in community. And I'm like, all right, just want to let you guys know that I'm going to be out of here soon. And I was fully expecting everybody to be like, absolutely, Ethan, you're doing great. Like, we support this. Crickets. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it upset me so much, man. Oh, I was so mad at that point. Like, I mean, everybody, not even my best friends there are telling me this is horrible. And I thought they were going to have my back. You know, it's exactly what they should be doing now, right. Like, now that I see that today. But so I didn't say another word that community. And I didn't even tell my sponsor that I was going to do that. You know, I didn't tell him that I was going to raise my hand that day and say that I was leaving. And he had heard it from another person. After I got home, I gave him a call, and he was like, "So, I heard you're leaving." And I was like, "Yeah, man, I put my notice in." And Todd Valentine was our counselor back then for three quarters. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, you know, am I going to go? Am I going to stay? Like, what's going to happen here? And I'd worked for my father for years before all this, and like, I was kind of shocked because he did not offer me another job to come back and work with him. So I was like, okay, you know, like, that's not great. But so I gave his buddy a call, and I was like, hey, man, can I come work at one of your dealerships? And he's like, absolutely, Ethan. Like, you get down here, and we'll get you a job. So I'm like, okay. So I got the job set up, and then I'm calling around for apartments and stuff like that, and I'm getting denied for every apartment that I'm applying to, and finally, I get this one apartment in a not so good area of Dallas, but I'm approved and I'm super excited about it. I ended up leaving about 4 or 5 days before I had planned to, because like, it had kind of gotten around to some of my friends that I had been thinking about it, and I thought they were going to out me in community. And so like, I needed to leave before the next community. So at this point, it's like I'm ready to go, and nobody here knows about it. And it comes down to that night, like the night before I'm leaving, and I tell my three roommates that night, I said, boys, I'm leaving at like 2 a.m. And they're like, I mean, they're shocked, and they're trying to, but they can see it on my face that there's no convincing me. Like, I'm going to go. And they're telling me, they're asking me, and they're doing what they can. But I'm like, man, my bags are packed. Like, at 2 a.m, I'm going to drive 12 hours back to Dallas, and I will be there at 2 p.m. And that's what I did. And I'm driving back, and I'm going through like Mississippi and Alabama and stuff, and I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, man, you're doing it. Like, you're sober for the first time in your life. Like, you are gonna do this thing. And the minute I drive back into Dallas, I'm like, you're in so much trouble, dude. You're in so much trouble. Like, you are about to relapse. Like, you know it's coming, and there's no stopping this. But I had to wait. I had to wait about a week before I could relapse, because I my apartment wasn't ready to move in, and so I stayed with my mom and dad, and I was sober for those like 4 or 5 days, and then the minute that I got my keys to my apartment, I was off. And like, I remember that morning, my mom, she was like, so we're going to see you later on this weekend. I think this was a Friday. She was like, we're going to see you on Sunday, right? Or Saturday. And I was like, yeah, you know, I'll see y'all around. And like, the minute I said that, her face just dropped, because she knew exactly what was going to happen. Like, she knew that she was not going to see me, and like, she knew what was going to go on. And that's exactly what happened. And that went on for about 3 months, and it was a gnarly 3 months. Yeah.
What were some of the highlights of what made it particularly bad, or lowlights, I guess?
Yeah, absolutely. So I go to work for my new friend that Monday. Well, I didn't even show up. I was drinking the minute I got my keys in my apartment, and I was supposed to go into work Monday, and I wake up. I have my alarm set for 6 o'clock, and I wake up, and I'm hungover. And I'm like, are you going to go to work, or there's a bottle right there? And I just grabbed the bottle. I'm like, I guess I don't have a job, you know, that's whatever. Next thing I know, my mom and dad kind of wake me up in my apartment. They're standing over me, and they took me to their apartment. And man, I raised hell at that apartment. And I finally walked out of there, and I wound up going to a detox about a week later. Just went back to drinking. Found a place to stay for a little bit, and I just wound up going. I mean, it was like I had no idea what day it was or anything like that, but I mean, I was either waking up outside, waking up in a hospital, or waking up in a jail. And I'm just like, man, like this is like, it happened a lot in that next like 3 months. And I finally wound up getting kicked out of Medical City, Louisville, because like I have this thing where like I would wake up in a hospital and I'd be all hooked up with these IVs and stuff like that. And I would just instantly rip the IVs out of my arms and be like, I need to leave. Like, y'all are trying to detox me. I don't remember coming here willingly. I don't know how I got here, but I know that y'all are trying to detox me and I'm not trying to get detoxed. So I would rip out the IVs and I'd just be bleeding down the hallways. And I would get in an Uber and I'd tell the Uber, take me to the liquor store and then drop me off here or whatever. And so finally Medical City said I couldn't come back there. And that when at that point, I think that was like my sixth stay in the hospital in that last like probably month and a half. And this is about 2 weeks now, maybe a week before I get to Mar for the second time. My timing is a little blurry, but so I get out of this hospital for the last time and I'm like, this is it, Ethan. Like, you know, there's no getting sober for you. What are you going to do? And I've never been a suicidal guy, in my mind at least. Mm-hmm. Like, people have always told me that I use suicidally, but like I was never, you know, that was never a thing that I would ever do. But I had saved up a little bit of money from when I was here in three quarters the first time. So I had, you know, a couple grand on me. And I was like, I'm going to buy a one-way ticket to Vegas. I'm going to spend all of my money and I'm just not going to make it back. Like, I don't really have a plan of like what's going to happen. But like I have no plan of making it back here. And I bought a 1 week hotel stay at the Venetian, and a ticket to Vegas, and
like the movie with Nicolas Cage.
See, people tell me that. People tell me that. I've never seen the movie. I guess so. I wake up that next morning and like, you know, I'm excited to go to Vegas. You know, like here I go, and I'm, you know, I'm drinking on the way to the airport and doing a whole bunch of other things, and I get to the airport and I'm like, all right, Ethan, just your one goal is to make it through security and get on that airplane. Like, that is the goal right now. So sure enough, like I put my sunglasses and a hood on and I showed up like 3 hours early, and I make it through security, and I'm like, well, you know, I'm here like 2 or 3 hours early. What am I going to do? Like, let's go to the bar. Like, that's what we do. So I'm sitting there at the bar and I'm drinking and I'm completely out of it at this time. And I'm pretty sure it's time to get on the airplane. And I'm walking up to my flight, my gate, and I cannot read my ticket. I mean, it might as well have been in Spanish. So I get on the airplane and I have no idea where to sit. And I just sit in the first seat available, and it's a first class seat, and I do not have a first class ticket. And so they're like, sir, we need you to get up. That's not your seat. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, absolutely. So I get up and I sit in the next first class seat. and at that point I was escorted off the airplane. I drove home from the airport. I have no idea how I made it home. I remember like flashbacks of it, just like swerving over like four or five lanes on the highway getting home. I'm so thankful I didn't hurt anybody or actually made it home. But and then that night I wound up getting my head cracked open, and I found myself in the hospital that they had kicked me out of back in Medical City, and they're like not wanting to deal with me at all. But my head is completely gashed open, and I just remember the doctor just grabbing the staple gun and just slamming six staples in the back of my head and just basically kicking me out of the door. And then I do what I've always done. And at that point is what, like, the only time that I was ever told that I've asked for help was when I'm in that stage. Like, I have no idea what's going on. You know, I'm either super high or drunk, and like I reach out and ask for help. And I remember texting my dad a picture of the pillow in the hospital just covered in blood. And I'm like, this is where I'm at again. And he said, the only way I'm willing to help you is if you will go back to Atlanta tomorrow. And I mean, I guess I said yes. I guess that's what happened. And the next day he comes and picks me up, and and I'm like, you got to go straight to the, because we're driving, you know, we're driving 12 hours back to Atlanta. And I'm like, you got to take me to the liquor store before I'm making this trip with you. And I'm like, don't go in that liquor store and buy a little flask. I mean, you better buy this giant bottle. And He did. He went in there and he bought the giant bottle, and we're driving back to Atlanta. I was completely blacked out. I think I peed his car a couple of times on the way there. Like, we had Nick Redman on the speakerphone and all that stuff. My dad had been in contact with him trying to get me back here. Nick was working for Mar at that point. The next day, I remember I wake up and I wake up in a detox center. And I'm like, okay, you know, this was familiar for me. And they're like, Ethan, you're at Sunrise Detox in Atlanta. And I'm just kind of laughing. I'm like, I'm in Atlanta. Like, I know exactly what's going on. Mm-hmm. I'm going back. I'm like, let me guess. I'm going to Mar. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, you're going to Mar. I'm like, I know all about Mar.
Yeah.
I'm like, I know all about Mar. You know, they have Nick Redman, my roommate, the guy that I had gotten to Mar the first time 2 weeks before. He's now working for Mar, and he comes and picks me up. And he's super happy to see me. And he drives me back here to Mar, and I'm just like, dude, here we go again. Yeah. You know, here we go again. So, and honestly, like, I remember the first or second nights being at Mar, and I just remember being like, I am here wasting everybody's time again. Like, this is not going to work again. I'm going to wind up staying for another 9 months, and then I'm going to relapse the minute I walk out of these doors. I'm like, what am I doing again, you know? And I think that was like the first time I actually got on my knees and just prayed and was just like, please, like, help me stop lying to myself. Because, like, I'm incapable of telling the truth to anybody. So I was like, just let's try not to lie, you know, for a little bit. Honestly, I don't know if I truly wanted to get sober. You know, like that was another thing, was like, I'm in this situation again because family reached out, people are here trying to help me. Like, I reached out while I was intoxicated, and now that I've gone through a, you know, 3 or 4 day detox, I've been at Mar for a couple of days, so, you know, I'm a week without any substance, and I'm starting to realize, do I want to do this? Mm-hmm. And the answer was no, but like, I don't have anything else to go back to. I've got nothing. And so I'm sitting there and I'm thinking about that a little bit. And like, I'm like, man, this is your 19th treatment center. You have never given this a shot. The last time you were at Mar for 9 months, you had a sponsor, you lied to him the entire 9 months. You had all these guys try to get close to you, and you kept one foot in, one foot out. We're telling them lies the entire time. Great friends with all of them, but just feeding them lies the entire time. So I'm like, why don't you try and do something different this time? And you know what? We'll stay at Mar for, I don't know. I wasn't going to put a timeline on it this time. That's why I decided. I don't know how long I'm going to stay at Mar this time, but I'm just going to try and do what they ask and try and do something different than I did last time. So I go out and it's time for me to get a sponsor. And I asked this guy that, like, I just couldn't stand. I mean, I think that I've got nothing in common with him. He's 65 years old, got 31 years of experience, you know, or 31 years of sobriety. And I'm just like, I can't stand this guy, but I'm going to ask him to be my sponsor.
What made you want to pick, or what made you decide to do it?
Because, like, the times before, I'd always picked a sponsor that, like, had like a year sober, uh-huh, was maybe like my age or maybe a little bit younger, like some guy I could completely BS,
right?
You know, and so I was like, all right, Ethan, if you're actually going to do this and say you're going to do some changes, go pick somebody who's not going to sit there and listen to your crap.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and I was like, if you're really being honest with yourself that you're going to give this a try, then go over there and ask that man to be your sponsor. And the minute that I asked him, our first meeting, I was like, I made a mistake. I was like, I made a mistake. This guy is going to completely call me out on my BS. Mm-hmm. And he did. He did. And we started getting to work, and we started working the steps. And I was still telling him the entire time, like, I don't know how much I'm telling you that's true. And like, I'm telling you these things, and at this point, I don't know if I'm lying or not.
Right.
Like, I don't know what the truth is. I don't know what I don't really know what I even feel, to be honest with you. Like, I'm just here and I'm trying to do things different, but I don't know if any of it's working. And like, I could tell you right now, if I wasn't at Mar, I'm going to go drink. So, I mean, like, if you're asking me like, if that's different, no, it's not, but I guess I'm still here with no timeline, you know? And things really started to change. And other people could see it. I wound up staying at Mar the second time for 10 months. And like, I had a plan to move out of Mar and to come in with these other guys that already had a couple of years of sobriety. And they gave me an opportunity to move into their house because I wasn't going to leave Atlanta. I was like, you know, the next, you know, if I'm going to go back to Dallas, that's on its own time. But right now, I think that my next move is to leave Mar correctly. You know, to do my goodbyes this time, because I had never left anywhere correctly ever. Mm-hmm. Every place I've ever gone to, I've either gotten kicked out of or just left, you know, randomly. So I finally left Mar on good terms this time. That was a complete change. I'd never done anything like that in my life. I got full support from everybody to go on to this next spot that I was going to, which was crazy to me. So I move over with these guys and. And that, you know, it was great, but I had 9 months sober at that time, and I was definitely a guy that needed structure. And so when I got over to that house, like, there was structure there, but it wasn't like it was in three quarters and all mm-hmm. that. And so, you know, I don't know about if slacking off is the right word, but like, I just started feeling like, man, I don't know if I'm really doing this, or if it was just the Mar 9 months of treatment that was doing it for me. And, you know, now that I'm on my own, like, am I really going to stay sober? And I remember I picked up my 1 year chip at 12 Step Titans with my best friends and my sponsor and all that stuff. And I remember saying, you know, this is 1 year, and I was so proud to have it. But like, in my mind, I was really thinking, I don't think I'll see 2 years. Like, I don't think I'll see 2 years sober. Because I'm doing this on my own, and I don't, like, I'm still not fully convinced, you know, which is like the greatest part about this program, is that like, I don't really ever have to know like what I'm doing, as long as I'm doing the right thing. And so like, I would talk to my sponsor about that a little bit, and he was like, well, we need to do some more work. Like, you know, what step are we on? We're on step 9. Have you made any amends? And like, no, I've not. And so, you know, so I've got this list of amends, whatever. And it's, you know, it's a good long list. And I remember handing it to my sponsor and being like, okay, I'm not willing to do these, which are like my sisters, who I haven't talked to in over 6 years, you know, but I'm willing to do these. And they're like ex-girlfriends and all that stuff that I want to call and like, let them know how great I'm doing. Yeah. He's like, yeah, well, you're not doing those. Like, yeah. Actually, we're going to do your sister first. Uh-huh. And I'm like, no way, man. So like I said, I hadn't spoken to her in 6 years. I was like, she's not even going to answer the phone for me. So he's like, well, give her a call. So I call my little sister, Nicole. She's 25. And from what I've heard, she's in Alabama at Southern College of Mobile or something like that. She's in grad school to be a PA. At this point, she was 25. I think the last time I saw her, she was like 18. And I gave her a call, and she didn't answer, which I loved. I mean, I couldn't have hung up faster when I heard her voicemail. And I called my sponsor back, and I'm like, well, man, I made the phone call, and she didn't answer. He's like, text her. I'm like, no, dude, like, I did the work already, you know, like, I've already, like, I didn't know you could tell me to do that, you know? And so he's like, yeah, text her. And so I texted her, and she responded, and we had, like, she was like, you know what, Ethan, if you're willing to come to Mobile, Alabama, I'm willing to sit down and talk with you. And I'm like, okay. So my sponsor actually drove me out there. He drove me out to Mobile to make sure that I did this thing. Because I really wasn't going to do it. I was just like, I was terrified of going to see her. I was ashamed. I had all this stuff going on. And so, yeah, he drove me out there. And I remember like getting out there and sitting down with Nicole, and like, I'm like trying to explain to her what I'm doing, you know, and I'm telling her at this point, like, I'm like, I've got like a year of sobriety, you know, and I need to let you know what I've done wrong and the ways to hurt you and all that stuff. And like, so she and I told her, I said, let me just talk, and then you can say what you need to say. And when I got done talking, she was just like, who's that man sitting out in the hallway? And I was like, that's my sponsor. And she's like, bring him in here. And I was like, oh, okay. And, you know, so like, I bring him in there, and she basically just tells him that this is my brother, Ethan, and he is lying to you, and he's lying to all of us right now. Like, he might have a year of sobriety, but like, there's no chance that he's actually doing this thing. And like, I'm sitting there, and I'm just like, she's right, you know, like I deserve everything she's saying to me because like, yeah, I am not to be trusted. And like, am I really doing this thing? Like I still don't know, you know? And, but I mean, something great came out of it. At the end of the conversation, Nicole had told me that like, if I was willing to pick up the phone, that she'd be willing to answer. So, I mean, something did come out of it. Me and my little sister have a fantastic relationship today. Wow. I just got done talking to her like 2 days ago. We call each other at least like once every other week and just talk.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's completely different now.
So what was it at Mar that you learned or experienced, particularly that second time, that gave you the courage or the support that you needed to, you know, to do all this stuff?
You know, I started listening for the first time ever. Like, I actually started listening to the guys that I really looked up to. I really looked up to Ashley McQueen, to Matt Irwin, and to Gray. I was doing one-on-ones with Gray, and he's sitting there telling me the entire time, like, yeah, Ethan, you're doing great again, but, like, still worried that you're doing this community stuff. And I'm like, yeah, dude, you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, this is what I'm doing again. And he's giving me suggestions and all this stuff, and I'm just trying to be honest and, like, that was a big thing because I was like, I would tell everybody, I'm like, this is what I'm saying. I feel like this is honest, but I really don't know, you know? And like, if you guys have suggestions for me for what I need to do, that's what I'm going to do. So like anything that anything Mar told me to do, I was like, let's just do that. If I'm on Buddy, let's stay on Buddy, you know, let's go in these classes and let's listen to what they're saying instead of just tune out, like go and get a job. Cause the first time I was at Mar, you know, I'm working and, like, supposed to be like 25 hours a week. I'm working like 50 hours and not telling anybody. I was breaking every rule possible without getting kicked out of Mar the first time. And the second time, I'm just like, let's just try and follow this stuff. You know, let's sit back and let's listen. Because I mean, I am looking at my three other best friends who have been out of Mar for a year and a half now and are still sober who went with me the first time. And I'm like, what did they do? You know, they did the stuff. Nick was always telling me, don't leave before the miracle happens, you know? And so, like, I was just like, I guess I'm just full in. As much as I really didn't want to be, what else do I have? I don't have anything else. So, you know, let's just stay back and let's listen. As many rules as I thought Mar had that were absolutely ridiculous, I'm just like, let's just try and do this. I remember I had Erica as a family counselor the second time. So the first time I came to Mar, I didn't make a single phone call for the 90 days, not to any family members at least. And I didn't do any family program. I was just like, I don't want any part of that. So like, my family is done with me, basically, is the way I feel, especially my sisters. And like, I'm okay with that because, you know, I don't think I'm getting sober at this point. And so like, when I came back this time, they introduced me to Erica, the family counselor, and she was like, we're going to invite your family to family week. And I'm like, as much as I don't want to do that, I'll be okay with y'all doing that. Which was crazy because, you know, I've been to, at this point, 19 treatment centers, and like, my family has never come and done anything like that before. I've never asked them to do anything like that before, which was a huge thing. I remember the impact group was extremely impactful for me going up there and talking to my dad and, just telling him these things I've done to him in front of his face. And me and my dad went back and we did the one-on-one counseling in the family week session. And, you know, we realized that the only kind of relationship that me and him have ever had been drinking. Like, we had never hung out before or anything like that. And like, I know that my dad coming here and doing like the family stuff, like, it was great, but I was like, he's never going to do anything like this again. You know, like, he's coming and doing this, but like, he's not a part of this. This is not who he is. And I remember it being suggested to him from Erica, like, hey, would you be willing to come up here or get on the phone with us once a month, you know, until Ethan leaves 3/4 and we'll do one-on-one counseling with you and him. My dad was like, if Ethan says yes, I will fly back up here next month and we'll do a one-on-one, and I will continue to fly up here every single month until Ethan is out of 3/4. And I'm like, yeah, Dad, I'll agree to that because you're not going to do it. Uh-huh. You know, I don't think I told him that, but in my mind, you know, that's what I was saying. And I was like, yeah, I was like, yeah, sure, I agree to that. But in my mind, I'm like, there's no way he's going to do that. Sure enough, man, the next month, my dad calls me up. He's like, I'll be there on Friday. We got a one-on-one with Erica. I'm like, you got to be kidding
me.
And we did that, you know, 4 or 5 months. And, I mean, so, I mean, things just really, things really started to seem different.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what was, like, the community stuff like the second time? You said that part always kind of came easier to
that part came easy. That's one thing I've always been really good at, is making friends. But my issue with making friends is that I can make them real fast and lose them even faster. And I can be okay with losing them real fast. I don't really like people getting in close to me, because then they figure things out and they want to stick and hang around. And that's what happened the first time, is that, like, I really loved my roommates the first time, but I got real nervous because they were really trying to get close to me, and I was like, y'all don't understand, like, I'm getting out of here, like, and if, like, the closer I let y'all get, the harder it is for me to get out of here. So, like, I did that the whole time the first time, and the second time I was just like, you know, like, let's maybe try and get vulnerable with some of these guys. Like, let's actually have these conversations. Let me try and call some of them. I remember I had to call one of the guys out in Mar the second time. He had came up to me while we were at work. He was a guy that was in three quarters and I was in halfway, but I had known him from the time before that I was here. And we were working together, and he was like, Ethan, our manager just came up to me and said that I smell like alcohol. And I was like, well, that's strange, dude. Did you tell him that we're in a treatment center? And he's like, Ethan, I've been drinking. And I was like, dude, why did you tell me that? It's like, now I am obligated to do something about it, you know, and I don't want to. And if it was the first time that I was here, I'd have absolutely hid that secret. I would have absolutely hid that secret. I would have not told a single person. And that ruined my day. I was just like going back and forth that whole day of like, what am I going to do? You know, like, basically by the end of the day, I decided I wasn't going to do it. I had decided, you know, like, I'm not going to do it. Like, I'm going to give this guy another chance. And I'm walking back from the farmer's market, and I'm still going back and forth. Like, and I'm like, you know what? Okay. If I see Ashley McQueen's red truck, then I will tell him. But if I don't see it, I won't tell him. So I come over the hill and his truck's not there. And I'm like, I guess I'm not telling him. And I walk in the door and I go, the first thing I say is, I need to speak to Matt Irwin. And at that point, I had known that I was already full in. And I was just like, and I sat Matt down. And I was like, Matt, this guy just came up to me. He's in three quarters and he's been drinking. And I feel awful for telling you this, man. So, I mean, that's some of the stuff that started changing, you know, with the community and stuff. Like, as much as I didn't want to do that, like, I knew that I potentially was helping the guy out,
right?
You know, and then getting closer with my other roommates and stuff like that, you know, having to call some of them out. It was like, getting uncomfortable was probably one of the hardest things for me to do, but it was probably like the biggest step I'd ever done, because like, if it's any kind of uncomfortable situation, I'm going to run away normally.
Mm-hmm.
That was extremely hard for me to do, but with my community this time, like, getting uncomfortable with them was a huge step in the right direction and a big progress for me, which a lot of them helped me out with. So, I got called out by a ton of them being like, Ethan, here you are again saying this and doing that. And you're a community guy, but you're not getting vulnerable with any of us. You're not doing it. And I'm like, you know, they're right. Like, they're absolutely right. I'm doing the same things as before. So, I mean, just the community this time, getting close with them and like actually letting them in with some stuff, because like, I mean, once I'd gotten past like the seventh month at Mar, like, I had decided that, you know, I might be in Atlanta for a while. Like, I might be in Atlanta past Mar, which was like something I never thought I would be ever doing. You know, I was always the guy that was going back to Dallas.
So what has life been like since?
Since, man, my life is completely different today. I say this a lot, like, the Ethan, because I'm 3 years sober now. I've got 3 years and 1 month, and I'm like, the guy 3 years and a month ago would hate this Ethan now. Like, if he were to show up today, I mean, he would want to kick my ass, because he'd be like, dude, you fell for this thing. And like, I did, man. And my life today is just so different. I am a routine guy. I have a routine that I stick to. I do certain things, throughout the week. I make my certain meetings. I am a huge part of my home group. I volunteer for stuff. I do a bunch of service work. I sponsor other men. I mean, there's still times that it's tough. I mean, I absolutely have tough days and stuff like that. But like, if I can just talk about it and just keep showing up, then like, if I can stay sober today, then I've got a chance at tomorrow is what I keep telling myself. Cause I mean, I told my story the other day and I'm like, I thought that if I ever had 3 years, I could quit going to these AA meetings and then I would know everything. Well, I'm 3 years sober and I know that I know absolutely nothing and then I'm going to keep showing up tomorrow. And I mean, that's just the great part of this thing is that like I can continue to tell them because I thought that like I had to have everything perfect at this point. And like being able to be open with everybody and being like, dude, I don't have things figured out. I've got no idea what I'm doing. And then I'm learning that everybody else is on the same boat is just like, okay. Because, I mean, if you were to sit there and tell me that you're 10 years sober and you've got everything figured out, I'm like, I don't have anything to relate with you with. And, like, because I have nothing figured out. Am I obsessed with all the steps and all the AA and all that stuff? Like, sometimes no. Sometimes I'm not. Sometimes I don't want to do this stuff. But, like, I know that I'm sober today because of this stuff. Like, I remember walking into the grocery store just, like, a week ago and being like, dude, you have enough money to literally buy any alcohol that you want in here and go hold yourself up in a hotel for months right now. And like, why are you not doing that? I'm like, that's wild to me. Like I would have taken that opportunity in a heartbeat. And now I'm just like, why? Like, it's a miracle that I don't do that stuff. I still ask myself like what's changed? Like what's different? Like sometimes I don't have that answer, but like, if I can like, just like play it out, everything's changed. Like nothing is the same.
If you had one thing you could pass on to people listening, what would it be?
Like my friend Nick Redmond said, man, don't leave before the miracle happens. I mean, I tried to make my own miracle happen the first time I left Mar. I tried to make my own promises come true. The promises were starting to come true the first time I was at Mar, but they weren't coming true fast enough in my idea, in my mind. And I made my own come true. And man, it backfired on me. Like when I see new guys now, like I don't think they understand like how much I relate with them, and you know I still feel like I never left Mar. I come to Mar every Saturday. I sponsor a couple guys here at Mar, and I'm just like, and some of them look up to me, and I've got other guys in here that tell me they're like, Ethan, there's a lot of people that look up to you here, and I'm like, I come here because of these new guys and how much I can relate with them on their level. Like that's why I'm here. Selfishly, I'm here for myself. Mm-hmm. I love being a part of it, but like I still need to see that stuff because I'm still. I mean, 3 years is just it's just time. All I have is today, and I've got to remember like that's like I am one beer away from completely ruining my life at any moment, and like that's a scary thought. That's why I keep coming back. And like so, I mean, if someone were to ask me, you know, like, what would you have to say to those guys? It's just like, dude, I'm there with you and things get better. Like, it's weird that they get better. And like, I can't tell you when or how. Everybody's journey is different. But like, I promise you, if I can do this thing, if I'm sober today for 3 years, like anybody can do this. You just have to do it.
All right, that's it for this episode of Stories of Recovery. I'm Matt Shedd. Our executive producer is David Tate. A special thanks to Ethan for sharing his story with us so generously. If you want to reach us, you can email us at podcast@marinc.org. That's podcast@marrinc.org. If you leave a review or a rating wherever you listen to podcasts, it really helps us reach a wider audience, so we'd appreciate that. Thanks again for joining us, and we're already looking forward to next time.